is Generation Justice, a multiracial project that trains youth to harness the power of community through media, narrative, and critical consciousness. I am Madhumita Santanam.
And I am Riazullah Alikozai. Tonight, we look at some of the journeys that New Mexicans have taken to find their voice and make connections across the world.
We'll hear from Kelly Garcia Chavez and Justin Allen, two community organizers with the abolitionist group Millions for Prisoners, to learn about voting rights restoration.
Then, for our newest segment, GJ Travels, we get a report back from New Zealand, where dozens of Native American Community Academy students travel for an Indigenous-led learning experience.
For that, we hear from 17-year-old Jonathan Alonzo, 18-year-old Anna Ray Serrano, and Ellie Kuna.
As always, we have some great calendar announcements, and our youth producers have chosen some excellent music, starting with Redemption Song by Bob Marley, a song about our struggle for physical and emotional freedom.
Emancipate yourselves from mental slavery. None but ourselves can free our minds. Have no fear for atomic energy, 'cause none of them can stop the time. How long shall they kill our prophets while we stand aside and look? Ooh, some say it's just a part of it.
Kelly Garcia Chavez is 48. She's a wife and a mother who was incarcerated for 18 years. Kelly is an advocate and organizer for Millions for Prisoners, New Mexico. She is currently on the Justice Advisory Board through the American Civil Liberties Union, or ACLU.
Justin Allen is a community organizer with Millions for Prisoners, New Mexico. Having served about 17 years in prison, Justin has witnessed the detrimental effects that the prison industrial complex has on our society.
Now, GJ Youth producer Liam Paul speaks with Kelly Garcia Chavez and Justin Allen about the work of Millions for Prisoners, New Mexico.
This is Liam Paul with Generation Justice, and today I'm speaking with Kelly Garcia and Justin Allen, two organizers with Millions for Prisoners. Kelly and Justin, welcome to Generation Justice.
Hi.
Hi.
Please share a little bit more about yourselves. Kelly, go ahead and start.
I'm a core organizer for Millions for Prisoners also. I'm on a Justice Advisory Board with the ACLU. It's a job committee. And also with Save the Kids. I've done 18 years in prison, and this is where my advocacy started. And that's where I got really interested in advocating for people that didn't have a voice. I believe that everybody should have a voice. When I was in prison, they put me to work in the law library. And this is where I seen where the system needed help. And it's not broken, it's just made that way. And it needs a lot of change. And so this is where my advocacy started. And I've been out 6 years, going on seven, and I've been on a mission since, and I've been full force at my advocacy.
My name is Justin Allen. I'm an organizer with Millions for Prisoners, New Mexico. I'm also part of a national voting rights restoration team with the Brennan Center of Justice. I joined this because I understand the impact civic engagement has on formerly incarcerated people. For myself, discovering the value of my voice and becoming civically engaged has helped me to reestablish my roots in society.
Thank you. Tell me more about Millions for Prisoners and its mission.
Millions for Prisoners is a grassroots organization. We advocate for people behind the walls. We give the voiceless a voice by exposing injustices that happen within the prison industrial complex. We support families who have been impacted by state violence. We also do a lot of work with the community in education, doing state violence trainings and things of that sort.
We're abolitionists, and we believe that prison shouldn't be around. Back in the day, our ancestors, when people had problems and they got in trouble, they did other means of restorative justice. And I know that we'll never see abolition in our lifetime, but if we could put it out there and, like, put a seed, then we're doing our job. And we do many, many things. We, like Justin says, we have workshops, we have education on abolition, on police violence, and know your rights. And like, we're willing to help anybody, even if you just want a little bit of education, to, you know, come and just see what we're about.
Thank you. Along those same lines, for people out there that may have a different view of people that are incarcerated, why should incarcerated people's rights be considered? This is including voting rights, but also other rights.
Well, I believe that the reason we find ourselves incarcerated is because we haven't been able to advocate for ourselves in the first place. It's important to realize that most people who find themselves in prison lost their voice long before they ended up there. You asked me why we should be allowed to vote, and I say because we're human. I mean, we're human beings. We deserve dignity. We deserve to be treated as a citizen. Otherwise, you get exactly what you've called us, criminals. When I said that most people find themselves in prison lost their voice long before they ended up there, what I'm referring to is that a lot of individuals in prison have endured adverse childhood experiences or trauma. You know, most of the prison population comes from broken homes where substance abuse was prevalent or poverty. I mean, instead of looking at a person as his crime, mm-hmm. why don't we start looking at what led up to the crime that we're talking about? I mean, to disqualify somebody based on a crime is basically calling somebody their crime. I mean, we're not the worst thing we've ever done.
And that's true. Like, I believe people should have their voting rights back, just because, for one, they're human. Everybody has been taught that, oh, you get in trouble, you're never going to be able to vote or get your rights back. Well, that's a Jim Crow law. As a society, we should not be dehumanizing anybody. We should give people their voice back, because voting is an extension of their voice, of a person's voice. You know, if you give them the right to vote, I believe that the whole conversation will change inside the prison. They won't be talking prison politics. They'll be talking politics out here, what's going to be good for their communities. If you give our formerly incarcerated people the chance to vote, they'll start getting involved in our communities. And, you know, they want them to come out and be a productive member of society. While if you're not letting them engage in civic duties, then how do you expect this person to come out here and be a productive member of society? And that's what we're aiming to have our formerly incarcerated people come out and engage in civil duties.
What Kelly's talking about is when we get sentenced to prison for a significant amount of time, we have to assimilate to that culture in order to survive. And part of that culture is a code of silence. So that just reinforces what brought us there in the first place. And disenfranchisement kind of solidifies that.
Mm. Thank you so much for shedding light on the issue of civic engagement among formerly incarcerated people. I'm gonna move on for right now to the different legislative actions that you guys have supported here in New Mexico and nationally. What have you guys been working on as far as that's concerned?
Well, both of us are part of a national voting rights restoration team, the Brennan Center. And we've also been engaged with the community, speaking with various groups, Indivisible Knob Hill, mm-hmm. what's the other ones? Inclusive Democracy.
We're also talking to the committees, the legislative committees. What we did, we made it all the way to the Senate floor. HB 57 made it all the way to the Senate floor, but it didn't get heard because they ran out of time and some other stuff. But they're going to hear it again. They're talking about it. They're getting education on it, because when HB 57 hit the floor, it was too radical for them. It was something that they didn't have education on. But now the legislators are wanting to get education on this bill, because they see that it's important, and they want to see formerly incarcerated people also engaging.
Yes, and last week I met with Secretary of the State, Maggie Toulouse Oliver, and she is in support of this. I mean, we want to make voting accessible to all citizens.
Thank you. What are some of the recent wins or victories for Millions for Prisoners that could be celebrated?
We've been recognized by the state legislature for our participation in Mass Incarceration Day. And we have a lot of relations with community members.
And also nationally, we were recognized nationally. Mm-hmm. We have millions for prisoners all over the nation. And we're a chapter. And we've also supported like other bills like Ban the Box, and which got passed.
Expungement.
The expungement bill. And we also backed up a solitary confinement bill, which will make things better for the people that are in restrictive housing units inside the prison. During the legislative session, like, we're just so, so busy and supporting the bills that will help not only our formerly incarcerated, but the people that are incarcerated. And, you know, those were some real big wins for us, like the expungement bill. That's, like, important for people that are formerly incarcerated, that, you know, after, you know, they stop being hung on a cross all the rest of their life. So, like, after so long, they can get a clean slate. Also, like, Ban the Box, it gives them a foot in the door to get an application, to get an interview. It also gives the formerly incarcerated person a way to be honest about themselves. You know, people are redeemable, and I believe that. And, you know, that gives them an open door to become a productive member of society, and that's what we're aiming for. Just because, like, you've been in trouble and you've been in prison, that doesn't mean you're a bad person. It just means that you made a bad choice, and you went and you paid your debt to society. Now let's move on, and let me become a productive member of society. And that's what we're out after, is trying to get this done.
Thank you for raising that point. And I think it's really important that you raise that, to note that people aren't getting rehabilitated. And I know you guys have experienced that firsthand. Would you like to share anything about that as well?
So I can't say that anybody truly gets rehabilitated there because of the violence we're subjected to. It doesn't matter how long your sentence is. Anybody that's incarcerated is going to be subjected to some sort of violence, whether it's by inmates or staff. My experience is that usually when people endure these types of violence, they remain silent about it. That code of silence comes into play, and a lot of the defense mechanisms that we develop to survive while we're in prison don't work out here. I mean, we have to literally let go of all those defense mechanisms we developed while we were there in order to make it.
Well, as for myself, I didn't get no rehabilitation there. Well, one thing I did do when I was there was I educated myself. As far as, like, what's going on now inside the prison, people are not getting rehabilitated, and they need to educate them more. And that's one thing that I want to also fight for, is for them to put education into the prisons, because 95% of those people are coming out to our communities, and, you know, you need to teach them something. And when they get paroled, they have a 30-day home plan, and that means that you got to either get a job or you get into school within 30 days. And if you don't do that, then you go back to prison. Let's educate them, and let's give them a trade. Let's put some knowledge into their mind. But as far as that part of the system, they're saying they're rehabilitating people, and they're not.
Thank you. Where have we seen examples of states or countries that have enfranchised incarcerated or formerly incarcerated people?
Here in the United States, Maine or Vermont are perfect examples of places that don't disenfranchise people. And anytime I've had Democratic representatives push back against disenfranchisement, saying, you know, talking about we don't want certain people with certain charges to vote. Like I said, we're not the worst thing we've ever done. Everybody, regardless of their crime, deserves a human dignity.
I mean, we met people from all over the United States that are working on this.
What's interesting, the East Coast, they're on board with it. Like the even the conservative Republicans, I mean, they understand. Yes. Law enforcement understands how disenfranchisement is related to recidivism. Providing somebody the opportunity to participate in society does prevent them from going back. I mean,
like, they're so in tune with wanting to do this. And I don't know why New Mexico is such a pushback when we're a multiracial state.
New Mexico has a long history of disenfranchisement that goes all the way back to the oppression of Native Americans. If you look at New Mexico Constitution, it states that non-taxpaying Indians, women, idiots, and felons cannot vote. So we're put in all the same class.
When you're doing this work in the legislature, what's the greatest pushback that you've received, and how do you deal with that?
One of the greatest pushbacks I've received is an example given by one of the legislators. If we allowed incarcerated people to vote, what would happen if a senator went in there to campaign and got kidnapped? And I thought that was the most ridiculous thing, because if anybody's planning that, it's not going to happen in a prison. It would be easier to do it out here at one of these churches that people go to. I mean, to even think about that, I mean, that tells you a lot about the way they perceive everybody in there.
The biggest pushback I had was when one of the legislators said, well, how will we do this voting if we let these people in prison vote? And I'm like, well, you guys know how to lock down a prison and take them to the gym and do, you know, you want the ballots to be authentic, then this is what you do. And he was like, well, we're afraid that the staff is going to mess with the ballots. If you're afraid that the staff is going to mess with the ballots, now you're just telling us, you know, you're coming up with these crazy ideas. It was also in that bill about, like, absentee voting. They were afraid that the ballots wouldn't get in the mail. And that has a lot to do with the system itself. If the legislators know that this could happen in their system that they put together, then something's wrong. And so that's before they watered it down and took everybody that was incarcerated out of the bill and put formerly incarcerated and are getting out of prison. Well, what the bill is going to have now, I believe, is people that are walking out of prison is an automatic voter or something like that. Is that,
yeah,
am I right?
So what they're trying to do now is make it to where as soon as you get released, you're eligible to vote. So right now you have to be off probation and parole to vote, but they're trying to make it to where if you're outside, if you're released from prison, you'll be able to. The pushback we're receiving from Democrats here in New Mexico is that the only way that they'll consider this is if we create carve-outs. Carve-outs are classifying good and bad inmates, basically disqualifying individuals from voting based on severity of crime or specific crimes. It's basically creating a good and bad type felon. It's just going to evolve. What we're trying to end isn't going to end. It's just going to evolve into something else. The example that I have for that is mandatory minimum laws. Both disenfranchisement and mandatory minimum laws are remnants from the Jim Crow era. They were intended to oppress the black population. And so it's important to consider this. Anytime we're having this conversation, where do you stand? Do you support Jim Crow laws? Will you uphold the disenfranchisement or abolish it?
Thank you. Where can people go to get more information about Millions for Prisoners or the legislative work you're doing as we get into the next session?
You can get us on Facebook, mm-hmm. on Millions for Prisoners, or we have a YouTube channel also. Okay. We're also fixing to put up a Twitter. Our YouTube channel has education about abolition and police violence.
Our YouTube channel is called We Are the Revolution.
And you can get a hold of me or Justin or Celinda mm-hmm. Guerrero on Facebook. And we need all the people we can get to fight this good fight.
And then is there anything else you'd like to add about this topic?
I believe that people should have a voice, and people don't understand that voting is an extension of their voice. You know, you even ask young people, have you registered to vote? Well, why? Mm. But I have to sit there, and it goes into a big old long conversation. Like, you know, this is an extension of your voice, and it's important that you be heard. And I believe everybody, every single citizen in America needs to be heard.
5 years ago, I wouldn't have even considered doing an interview like this. That's how the impact civic engagement has had on me. I mean, literally, I've reestablished my roots in society. Albuquerque or New Mexico is no longer disillusioned by what the newspapers or TV say about me because I've established my roots here through civic engagement. And voting, I got to vote for my first time in my life last year, and it meant everything to me. I mean, it means everything to me. It means that I'm a citizen. It means that I belong here. It means that I'm not a number.
Thank you. Thanks, Kelly and Justin, for being on the show.
Thank you for having us.
Mm-hmm. For Generation Justice, I'm Liam Paul.
Thank you, Kelly and Justin, for sharing your experiences with us.
Thank you for fighting and speaking for those who cannot, and for helping people find their voices through civic engagement.
Now, here is We Shall Overcome, composed by Charles Albert Tinley and sung by Diana Ross.
Someday we'll all be free.
The Native American Community Academy, or NACA, strives to build youth confidence and their cultural identities. And NACA education includes the opportunity to share and learn about indigenous cultures in the United States and abroad.
As part of our newest segment, GJ Travels, we sit down with longtime Generation Justice member Jonathan Alonzo, recent NACA graduate and college freshman Honore Serrano, and Eli Cuna, recent National Field Director for United We Dream and Anaka community member.
Now, Kate Rizzuni speaks with the three to hear about the lessons and experience they had while sharing their indigenous cultures in New Zealand.
This is Kate Rizzuni with Generation Justice, and I am speaking with Honore Serrano, Eli Cuna, and Jonathan Alonzo. Jonathan is a current NACA student. Honore is a recent NACA graduate in the class of 2019, and Eli is a NACA community member. Everyone, welcome so much, and thank you for joining us at Generation Justice.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having us. So excited!
It's an honor.
Can I have you do some introductions? Can we hear more about you, Jonathan?
So my name is Jonathan Juarez Alonzo. I am 17 years old, and I am a senior at the Native American Community Academy. I've attended since sixth grade, so this is technically my seventh year. And then, I'm from Laguna Pueblo and Isleta Pueblo here in New Mexico. I am the co-founder and president of Fight for Our Lives, and I've been with Generation Justice for about 5 years now.
Yat eshike doshidane she e anaris rani initia, adone inishlinagi e, synogen inishlim, nakaidine e bashishin, nakaidine e dashache, nakaidine e dashinale. I just introduced myself in my native language. I am Mexican, Hispanic, and Navajo, and I just recently graduated from Native American Community Academy. I have been there since sixth grade, and I'm moving on to be a freshman at Fort Lewis College, so it'll be a huge change for me. And I am involved with Faces for the Future, United We Dream, the New Mexico Dream Team, Planned Parenthood as a peer educator, and that's basically a glimpse into my life.
I'm Eli Kuna. I'm a NACA community member, volunteer. Whatever they tell me to do, I will do it. I love them all so much, so much. And on my side work, I just do immigration rights, and I work with UWD and New Mexico Dream Team. But I connect with the leadership in NACA during the DREAMA campaign, right? And since then, they opened their spaces, the places, and then I fell in love. And I strongly believe that I'm a community member of there.
So I'd like to just jump right into it and have you tell us about your recent trip to New Zealand. Ellie, can I have you start?
So as I shared before, the leadership in NACA and United with Dream New Mexico Dream Team, we have crossed our paths. We have been trying to pilot like some cross-movement projects. And in conversation, some of the NACA students went to a national congress in Miami in UWD, right? And also they have been throwing down in the educational deportation mobilizations for us. Quite a time. And they asked me if I will be interested to really support and be part of the process to be a chaperone. I dije, pues, ¿qué es eso? What is that? What does that mean? I'm like, yeah, it will be nice that you can be a chaperone and you're going to go to New Zealand and it's going to be an amazing experience. And the way how they organized me, it was like, oh my God, let's do it. So I just did it. And then I didn't realize the whole process that means that we need to practice
like, wait
every
a
morning,
minute.
That we need to do our singing, that we need to set up like a whole protocol of presentation of our identity. So this was like a really healing journey for me. I'm like, oh my God, this is about me being queer, immigrant, being like a Mexican, and bringing all my identities together. And that was how I got introduced to New Zealand and to the New Zealand trip and see if they could accept me.
So just to kind of set the stage or backtrack a little bit, the Native American Community Academy where me and Anna Ray, or NACA, me and Anna Ray is a recent graduate. I'm still a current student. But for about, I think going on about 10 years because it's on the off year, our school has had a cultural exchange program with sister schools in Aotearoa, New Zealand. So every other year, our junior and senior grades will send a team of students out to New Zealand for cultural exchange. And then on the off year, the New Zealand school sends students out here to New Mexico. So the most recent one was this last June. It was our largest group ever, about 30 students from New Mexico and from indigenous communities here traveled to New Zealand, and we traveled several different cities on the North Island and the indigenous communities there to really just get that's really what it is a cultural exchange so that we can share with them our traditions and our culture here as indigenous people in America, and they can do the same as indigenous people from Aotearoa.
Adding on to what Jonathan said, Native American Community Academy, they put together this trip and they recruit juniors and seniors and alumni. You can be an alumni and community members to join us on this cultural exchange. And we spend Tuesdays doing group practice and every Wednesday doing singing practice. And we sing traditional songs and we practice those for like about an hour every day. And then like once it's like May, we have like all the fundraising done and we have everybody's ready to go. Everybody's like, we're like, okay, we've like done all these months of fundraising and practicing. We're ready to show off. Like we're ready to show what we're made of. So we go on the trip and we go to sister schools and we perform. There's different groups too. There's like, we had a Navajo group and we had a Pueblo group, and they would show their dances, their sacred traditional dances. And we did the same. I was in the Navajo group. Our group did the Navajo basket dance. And then in another group, I got to share my passion for singing, and I got to sing Como la Flor by Selena. and like just to share my voice. And people come up to me and people are like, they're like, I have no idea what you said and I have no idea what you're singing. I've never heard that song. And then some other schools would be like, I love that song. Like, I can't believe you'd sing that. Like, you have such a pretty voice. It just like, it made me believe because I've always had a passion for singing. And like, that's why the trip was so life-changing and like enlightening in a way, because it showed me that I don't need to give up on my dream and that it's still there. And that all these cultures, like, they have wonderful singers too. And so I was just happy to be a part of this trip.
With all the time that you spent with the Maori people and in different communities and schools, what were some of the lessons that you learned?
I think the trip to New Zealand as Naka Native American Community Academy, with the core values that is about identity, wellness, community engagement, is the milestone of building the identity of who is this Indigenous young person. Mm-hmm. And who you are preparing in your leadership to continue really being a trailblazer, not just in other countries, but globally, right? And when you have that conversation with the Maori young people, you see that they are also the intersectionality of their identity. They not just are Maori, but they are also women. They are also queer. They are also another layers of identity. And you see young people sharing their stories and having a common idea of how they are developing the global identity as Indigenous young person. And I think that's really powerful to see, to experience. And even myself, I'm born in Mexico, to really reconnect my Indigenous practices in my daily day. Right. That I was like, well, that's totally, those protocols are really similar to my protocols in my home. And that protocols that the Pueblo sisters have is really similar to my protocols as well. So this is, you create a global identity that we share protocols that are really based on the core values of our communities. And I think that was one of my biggest lessons learned. Right. And how you keep sustainability in that identity.
I would just say one of the biggest connections that I've noticed is how important it is to the Maori people to protect their sacred lands and their water. So when you go to New Zealand, there's actually the sacred river, which actually holds personhood, what they call it. So if a company were to come and pollute this river, it actually has its own rights to then sue the company for damages and stuff like that. So they're giving actual legality and legal rights to their sacred sites, like their sacred mountains and their sacred rivers. And that was just really powerful for me, because I've been to Standing Rock and I've seen firsthand the fight to protect like Indigenous sites and Indigenous water, and to just see how that is like echoed across the globe. And like, this is all the way out in like New Zealand. Like, we had no connection culturally before this, but to really be able to sit there and like see all the connections, like Ellie just said, like, that's so similar to our protocol, or that's like, just seeing those connections and where things differ was just so powerful to me.
How do you feel you've changed since your time in New Zealand? And we'll start with you again, Anari.
Seeing the culture as a whole and experiencing that just made me have a new appreciation for my culture and showed me that I should be proud of where I come from both sides. Being mestiza, like, you have to be proud of both of your cultures and learning both of your languages. And it was an amazing experience. And I feel like when I was there, I had a lot of decisions that I was unclear about. And when I came back, all of those decisions suddenly seemed like solved. Like, I suddenly knew what to do. I suddenly knew what I wanted, and I knew where I wanted to go, and I knew what I wanted to be. I'm still unclear about a lot of things, but in a way, I just remember my time in New Zealand and how the experience just made me want to be closer to my community. And that's why, like, I'm choosing to be a pediatrician in my community. I mean, like, I've always had that dream, but just learning about what these kids are doing and what these kids want to be, it made me have more courage to be what I wanted to be, which is to be a doctor in my community and practice with traditional and Western medicine.
That's beautiful. Thank you.
For me, it was in our last week there, right before we got sent out to our billeted homes, to go from being scared and nervous about going to this family's home because they have no idea who I am, to being completely accepted into this family, eating dinner with them, like being like one of their kids, like all these other Maori kids, they're just like my siblings, and being treated and accepted in that way, I'll never forget that.
Ellie, what changed for you?
So first, I think it's a whole process, right? It's not just the trip. It's the whole process of preparation that is at least a whole year, right? And then the practices like
dedication.
The dedication and discipline that start building you up. And is the fact that you are just dealing and facing your own, the worst fears that you have. Do I seem pretty or not? People is going to think it's crazy that a Mexican is singing a Lakota song. Who I am to sing this? Things like that. Like, those are really, like, struggling for me. Like, am I supposed to be singing as a woman or I should be just quiet, right? Is this my place or is not my place? So the whole journey start building you up. And when you are there, I'm totally with Anna Ray. Like, I see my stuff, like, clearer. Like, after that, I'm almost 32 years old, and I was, like, crying. And I'm, like, I was living it up. I was, like, I can be someone else beyond being immigrant. I had never had to deal with that, right? Like, yeah, I'm super Mexican, I'm immigrant, but I'm more than that, right? I'm also, I can connect with people. We know that experience, and it's okay. I'm human, and be proud of where I'm from, and feel that proud, and wear our dresses with pride. And I think that was healing, that was powerful, and you build a community among NACA and also outside NACA, right? So yeah, it changed a lot. I like to sing now. I like to sweat. I like to do all that, but it's not like, I know why. I know because it made me feel closer to my grandmas and closer to my grandparents. And it made me remind me of who I was and who I am in the desert where I was born, that is Torreon, Coahuila. It may be far away from where I am right now, but it reminds me of my roots and my ancestors. That's why. I want to share that when I was in the trip, I shared with a couple of people about, like, this has been the dream of my little brother. He's undocumented. He cannot go out. He also is kind of a NACA community member. He goes hang out with me and like all that. And he is part of the New Mexico Dream Team. So he dropped me in the airport. He cried. He said, bring me just a t-shirt and whatever from New Zealand. But when I share it with the NACA folks over there and also the Maori sisters and brothers, everybody, when we say bye, everybody was saying, one day you're going to come back with your brother. One day your brother is going to be with us. And that was like, Tim, you remember about it? And when I was there, it was like some of the, like, the Pueblo sisters, like Estrisha, Shan, like Carol, even Chuck, Duta, were like, one day your young people is going to be here with us. And I think as a leader, that was for me like, thank you. You see me, you hear me, you love me. And then this is the reason why I'm throw down with you and have your back. Because they were really intentional to say, look, the New Mexico Dream Team will love to see this. And they were like a bringing to the place, right? And I super appreciate, grateful. And I wanted to share that because it's not about privilege, but also how you use the access that you have, how NAC is really intentional to bring everybody there, regardless.
I feel like I had a similar experience to what Ellie had. Like when I was dropped off in the airport, I said bye to my little sister and she cried. And like, it prepared me for what college life is going to be like. Like I'm going to say bye to my family and they're going to go away. So immediately when I came back, I hugged my dad and I started crying. And I was like, it was such a wonderful experience. But to be away from your family that long, it just feels like you leave to another country, you're like, I'm excited. I don't need my family. I'm ready. I'm not going to be homesick. Then you come back and you're like, oh my God, I missed you guys so much. Like, you guys have no idea. I know you guys didn't miss me that much. And I know it's been like less days for you, but like, it feels like it's been like a month for me. And yeah, it was just, this experience was amazing. And to know that I'm setting an example, I'm being a role model for my little sisters and that they can do this. This is an opportunity. This is very possible for them to go to New Zealand or really any country and just share their culture.
As we close this time together, is there anything else that you would like to add or possibly folks you need to thank for helping make this trip possible?
Yeah, I feel like thanking Naka, especially the higher ups, like for putting this trip together, and the community members and the Naka families for putting their time and their dedication, and especially whoever went on the trip, their time and their dedication and just their love into this trip. It just made it very fun and awesome. Like, it was a very enlightening trip. And I would also like to thank the families that were in Aotearoa and how they just took in random strangers.
Yeah.
They, like, welcomed us with open arms. Like, they were the nicest people I had ever met. And, yeah, I just want to thank everybody who made this trip possible, especially people in Aotearoa.
So just really a big thank you to Naka and all the amazing people there that have allowed us to have this experience and this opportunity. And just as much thanks to our family in Aotearoa for putting the dedication and the time into planning this out. I know a lot of the stuff on our side is just getting the money to get there and kind of having those logistics. But once we get there, every day from like 6 to 6 is on our family out there and what they have planned for us. And it was the most amazing 14 days of my life, and I can't wait to go back.
Thank you guys so much for joining us here at Generation Justice. I was watching the videos that were being posted and thinking about you all and seeing the pictures, and it meant a lot to see that not only were you experiencing these amazing cultures and meeting these people, but also to see, you know, young Indigenous people and young people dressed in their Pueblo outfits and traditional clothes and everything. It meant a lot. And so I really appreciate you coming here and sharing that with us. For Generation Justice, I'm Kateri Zuni.
Jonathan, Honore, and Ellie, thank you for sharing your experience and building bridges between people.
We truly appreciate you representing your culture, and we thank you for sharing your stories with us.
Now, in honor of South Pacific Indigenous cultures, we listen to We Know the Way by T. Wahka with Orchestra Wellington.
Welcome back to Generation Justice. Before we close our program, we have some quick calendar announcements to share.
What's coming up, Madhu?
We have the Cultivating Indigenous Resistance Workshops.
Hoo-hoo-hoo, that sounds nice. You know, the workshop will be from October 10th to 12th at the Southwest Organizing Project at 211 10th Street downtown.
Yep, it's a 3-day event hosted by Pueblo Action Alliance. There will be workshops and meals are provided as well.
For more information, contact Pueblo Action Alliance on Facebook.
Next is Voices of Tomorrow, Then and Now, on Sunday, October 13th, from 3 o'clock p.m. to 6 o'clock p.m. at Albuquerque Civic Plaza.
There will be DJs, food trucks, games, and a film screening of Mighty Times, The Children's March. There will also be a panel discussion to follow.
The film is about youth activism in the civil rights era, and the event aims to build dialogue around youth leadership in ABQ. For more information, visit the Facebook event page, Voices of Tomorrow, Then and Now, or contact 315 New Mexico.
That's it for our community calendar. We hope you have enjoyed this hour of community action. We would like to thank our guests, Kelly Garcia Chavez, Justin Allen, Jonathan Alonso, Ana Ray Serrano, and Ellie Kuna.
Tonight's hour of radio was produced by Kateri Zuni and Roberta Rael. And thank you to our interviewer, Liam Paul. And thank you to Nicole Beatty and Barbara Ramirez for production assistance.
We want to give a big shout out to all of our youth producers. We could not do what we do without you. Generation Justice would also like to thank KUNM for bringing the voices of young people to you. KUNM listeners.
Our website is generationjustice.org, where you can check out all of our multimedia work and listen to our podcast, which is also available on SoundCloud and iTunes.
We're also active on social media. Find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.
Generation Justice is funded by the W.K. Kellogg Foundation, with additional funding from Kon Alma Health Foundation, and of course, all of you who have contributed to our project by visiting our website and clicking donate.
Generation Justice would like to remind you that this program was broadcast on stolen Indigenous land.
Our opening song is Youth of the Nation by POD. Coming up on KUNM is Spoken Word, so stay tuned and join us next Sunday at 7 o'clock. I'm Madhumita Santana.
And I'm Riazullah Alikozai. Our last couple of songs for tonight are Freedom is Free by Chicano Batman, followed by We Are One by Defi featuring Drazy. Thank you so much and good night.
Thank you and have a wonderful night.
To the audible epitome, walking my moccasins on wallabies. I find an oddity, a modded, an oddity, anomaly. Winning even when I'm living in poverty. Never working harder, support the culture. Arrive at the departure, ignore the vultures. Sit back in the game like an organ donor. They grow back from soil as four leaf clovers.
We are rebel, yeah. The people's voices. At the foot of the mountain, standing rock by